Welcome to the Draw.Biz Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
Welcome to the Draft Doctors, your home of fantasy footy draft all year round. It is ranking season, people, and it's our first official rankings episode for 2020. We'll be going through our top 30 overall AFL fantasy ranks. I'm your host, Doss. No Stevie Fizz today, but here to join in the fun, sipping on some Mango Unchained, it's Jonathan Crockett. G'day, mate.
G'day, Doss. G'day, Cam. G'day, listeners. Happy New Year to everyone out there. Fantasy ranking season is upon us now that we're in January. And it feels like I haven't been on the show in what seems like an eternity. So good to be back on, and let's get into it.
Very keen to get into it, but a quick explanation on the Mango Unchained, Jono, please.
So it was my brother's birthday on the Sunday, Jan 5th, and we're down at Jetty Road Brewery having a few drinks, and they've got a new release, Mango Unchained, and it is quite delish. So it's mango IPA, just tastes like mango juice, and I'm sure it's going to hit me later on tonight.
Mango's a great fruit.
Certainly are. Fears. Love them.
Cam McLaughlin is here as well. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Super excited about the ranking season. You know, it's the time of the year when no one's right, and depending on who you talk to, everyone is wrong except for them. But, you know, it's the perfect time for conjecture and speculation. I love hearing all of the opinions online, reading all the stuff on Twitter. So much great content coming out there from so many people at the moment. Then I just basically ignore them and lock in Jacob Townsend at F1.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Well, let's get into it. Exciting stuff, ranking season. We're going to be using Jono's ranks, and we're going through our top 30 overall AFL fantasy ranks, taking into account positional value and our projections for season 2020. We'll start off. We're going to go through the top 10. Jono, take it away.
Thanks for that, Dossie. Yeah, kicking off my number one, it's pretty easy. It is Brody Grundy from the Pies. Averaged about 122 last year. Should do exactly the same in 2020. Number two, Jack McRae, inside-outside player for the Doggies. Not going to be a tag target, pretty simple. And I won't be against anyone if you do take McRae, number one as well. So no problems there whatsoever. Number three, Adam Treloar. He's an AFL fantasy stud. A little bit lower in your Supercoach formats, but we can talk about that on another pod. Number four, I've got Stephen Cornelio. Did I say that right this time? Is it Cornelio?
You did well, Jono.
Yes, thank you. Got a bit of backlash about that. So Cornelio at number four. Look, he did have that injury affected year. He went at 103, but I can see him being a top midfielder this year, being the number three midfielder, about 110 average that I'm projecting him this year. Zach Merritt, he is an absolute AFL fantasy stud. We've seen him go 110, 111, I think, in his second and third year. So Essendon have to get better, right? I mean, they have the rig, Tommy Cutts in that midfield to help him now, so surely he goes better. Maxie Gawn coming in at number six, average 111. He's got no competition down in there at the D, so he'll be doing what Max Gawn does, and that is taking on the big ruck duties there. Number seven, Dangerfield. Lost his forward status, but still going to be right in the middle of the guts there. Seeing as Steve's not here, I'll take the Joel Selwood hate flag carrying on that Joel Selwood will not be in that midfield and it will be all Dangerfield himself. Lockie Neal had a great year, first year at Brisbane Lions, and I think he goes better next year. We did know he got the tag target, but I think the Brisbane Lions will learn from that and they'll run interception and he can go bigger as well. Our first position, a forward or defender, I've got Lockie Whitfield in at number nine this year. He averaged 113 AFL fantasy with the likes of Callum Ward, Coniglio Kelly, hopefully all playing the majority of the games. He'll still average well and be the number one forward, I think, but you won't see 113. It's 100 for me. And Clayton Oliver, we have seen him go 109 in AFL fantasy before, and I think he returns to that sort of scoring again in 2020.
All right, we'll have a quick chat about your top 10, Jono. Cam, do you have anything that stands out to you quickly before we have a broader discussion?
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised not to see Tom Mitchell in that top 10, though I can, you know, based on what I've heard from everyone else in the pod. Like, I can see why you've done it, but I still find it really interesting that you could rank him, you know, potentially so low. The other thing that maybe stood out for me was Zach Merritt at 5. The concern for me is that the Bombers have come back basically injured, the entire team. So there's so many people that are not training well. And even if it's not Zach Merritt, doesn't mean that he won't be affected by that if the team is performing so poorly as a result. But that's probably the main two differences. Like, I had basically the same people as you, just in a different order in that top 10.
Well, we saw with Clayton Oliver last year, he had shoulder reconstruction, still banged out 105 average. So just because the team's crap around him doesn't mean Zach Merritt can't do the same.
And that's maybe one of our other differences in our top 10. So I've got Oliver quite high. And because I was so impressed with what he was able to do on the back of the shoulder surgeries the season before and the fact that the Demons were so poor, I think there's another level to Oliver if he's coming in with a full preseason and the Demons are better and, you know, Gorn's still monstering. I think there's maybe an argument that he could be an absolute weapon next year.
I think there's a couple of other things. Is Lachie Neal quite high here? I think Lachie Neal at 8 is a pretty big call. You're saying he's going to improve again, Jono. He had a pretty monster year at the Lions, and I mean, they did just bring in Cam Ellis-Yomin. We don't know what sort of a role he's going to play. We've also projected maybe Jared Lyons also pushing forward a bit. We know the Hugh McCluggage is going to average 110 based on last week's podcast as well, Cam. So do you think Lachie Neal can also step it up another level next year to be a first-round pick here?
Yeah, certainly. If he brings his kick-to-handball ratio up, so more kicks-to-handball ratio, which is greatly affected in the AFL fantasy format, then he certainly can. And this is a guy, I remember, averaged 107 at the Fremantle Dockers behind Nat Fife and was the leading possessions getter that year. So I can't see why not that he can improve yet again at least another 3 or 4 points on that average to get close to that 110 average.
Yeah, that's one I can't buy into. I can't see. He averaged 111, you're talking about, back in 2016, and he averaged 33.5 touches that year with 4 tackles, 4 marks, nearly 5 tackles, 31 disposals this year. I can't see that happening, but I understand if he does change his kick-to-handball ratio, but he's never done that. He's never been able to up his kick-to-handball ratio.
It's preseason. We can make all these predictions, and we're neither wrong or right at this stage.
All right. I love it, Jono. The other thing is Whitfield, you've got him at 9, and you're basically saying you're not willing to draft him, where I feel like a fair few people are going to go earlier on Whitfield in draft.
I can totally see it. I'm not comfortable with getting him.
Yep.
As my look, if the captain's on league and he averages you 100, I'm still going to get. I can get a Danger, Neil, Oliver behind you if you do get Whitfield at a 5-6 position, and they're going to average more. Well, I feel. Whereas I see Whitfield at that 100 average, the other guys are going to be ahead. So I'm already 5 to 8 points potentially ahead of you, especially in the captain's league.
All right, take us through your next 10, Jono.
Coming in at number 11 is my boy Lloyd. Jakey Lloyd. I did call on our Hot Takes podcast that he won't even be a top 10 defender in 2020. But look, doing that research, I almost bought into the hype myself. But no, he'll be up there again as the number one defender for the Swans and quite possibly the number one defender in the competition. Dustin Martin, I think he goes higher in Supercoach, but for AFL fantasy, I'm pretty happy to get him in this position. If it's coming back to you, look, he's certainly in that 9 to 12 bracket. So he's at the end of the first, start of the second. He'll be safe as house for you. Tom Mitchell at 13 for me. I just feel comfortable. Again, look, it's that captain's on. You want a safe player, if that makes sense. I'm happy to get Titch in the second round. If I miss out on him, that's fine. I can live with that. There's going to be plenty of other people there. Josh Dunkley, for me, he did go 111 in 2019. I think with Libba back and maybe a bit more mid-time for Lipinski in that, he comes down a little bit. Being the younger guy in that midfield. I mean, Bond's a captain. He's not coming out of there. McRae is just solid as a rock. So I don't see him coming out of there. I think Dunk takes a little bit of a hit, but not too much. So I've got him projected to about 108 average for this year, so a slight dip. Again, I've got the Bont in at number 15. I see him coming up. He did miss out on a little bit of that midfield time at the start of 2019, but now that he's going to be playing full midfield time, you'll think with Josh Bruce in that team, he can potentially go close to a 109 average, 108, I'm thinking. I've got the first Crouch brother in at number 16 in Brad Crouch. Rory Laird, 17, and Matt Crouch, 18. Sort of a bit of an unknown position there for the Adelaide boys. They've got the new coach. What sort of game plan are they going to play? So I put them there as a bit of a non-risky drafting selection. So you'd be happy with them there, but it's not overly safe and it's not overly risky. So it's a Steve Fence sit right there. Coming in at number 19, I've got Josh Kelly. And people go, why the hell have you got Josh Kelly in at 19? This guy averages 115, 120 every bloody year. But he only plays about 15 to 16 games a year. He is always injured, especially when he's got these soft tissue injuries. He's got the Brett Deludio injuries early in his career, not at the end. That is something I do not want in my first round of my drafts. I want to play it safe, especially your captain's on. And one thing we always say here at the Draft Doctors, your best asset is your availability. So if you're not playing, you're not scoring for me. So I'm happy to take him at an M2 in my second round, or let it be someone else's problem. And coming at number 5 is Nat Fyfe. Coming at 20 is Nat Fyfe. Had a career year. If he stays healthy, he's a Ronnie Brownlow medalist. He can do exactly the same again with the help of Gus Brayshaw and Chera in that midfield.
All right, we've already touched on, I guess, Titch. Did you want to talk any more about Titch? We know he's a huge talking point. You do have him at 13. I think, Cam, you have him in that first round pretty high up as well. I've got him sneaking into the first round there as well, just based on the upside. I understand a couple of these picks here, you can just tell your strategies, Jono, as well, in the way that you like to draft, in that Kelly and Titchell being later, they don't play. We don't know what Titch situation is going to be like. It's not a safe pick, like you've mentioned. And Josh Kelly as well. Just you don't want to get a guy that might just miss games. It's something you've come in here thinking.
Well, I'm a safe drafter. Yeah, I've always been a safe drafter where I minimize my risks early in the draft. But then I look later on to maybe grab a few of the riskier players. But my first three rounds, they're pretty vanilla and safe.
And I think Kelly's one that'll be going a lot in first rounds on plenty of leagues based on his average next to his name. You know, he's got, doesn't he not? He has like pretty much one of the top averages, if not the top average.
115, for the year, which was playing. He pipped McRae to be the number one midfielder.
The number one.
By 0.1 or 2%.
14 games. So, it's going to be tricking a few draft coaches out there. Or who knows, he might bring back value. But Cam, what did you see in the second lot of 10 that we've got here?
I mean, we kind of did a bit of almost the gender reveal of these positions, and we've just seen them, like who each of us have. And I was very surprised that John and I have actually ranked Josh Kelly at the same spot. I agree. Like, I really think that he could potentially, he's not in your team enough getting you those scores, and there's also enough question about the makeup of that GWS mid that, you know, it just adds another thing to the risk factor, and for me it makes him slide a little bit where I'd be comfortable. As you're saying, we did talk about Titch a little bit before. I have him at 7, but I'm starting to feel like the best place to take him is on the turn. Like, if you have the option to take Titch on the turn, I think you get really good value. And you can sort of back it up with maybe a safer mid pick as well. Start your draft with two mids. You've got a potential guy that can go 120, but you've also got a backup guy that can go 107. Otherwise, I love the Crouch brothers being in there. I think anywhere in that second round, you'll get good value for the Crouch brothers. Without Cam Ellis-Yolman, without Hugh Greenwood, I think there's a very good chance they improve on their averages from last year, or at least maintain. And the one that I'm interested in that I have at number 12, and I guess we'll get to in the next one, is Patrick Cripps.
Yeah, we'll get to him momentarily. I think something worthy of saying, though, is that Cam and I both have Matt Crouch ahead of Brad Crouch, and Jono has Brad ahead of Matt, which I feel the reason I did that was I see more upside with Crouch, and especially how he came home last year. And also, you're talking about Kelly as a guy that misses games per year. We've seen Brad, he did play a full 22 last year, but that's the first time he's done that in a while. And he had the full year off the year before. I'm more scared drafting him than I am Kelly. And yet you've got Kelly at 19 who bangs out big ass scores year after year. I know he doesn't play as many games, but I'm just worried about Crouch. I know he's played the 22, but I'm still not convinced that he's going to be able to do that year to year.
The only reason I got Matt Crouch down so low is I had him in our home league this year as my second pick, and that prick burnt the shit out of me, so he can get fucked.
See, I've got him in the spot that you've basically got Lachie Neale, because I see an uptick that's possible to take him to that premium status. So,
hey, there's uptick, but he's a bloody plotter who handballs. He doesn't kick, he handballs.
He upped that a little bit this year. Anyway, we'll get on to your final 10, and then we will dissect sort of a few more picks in more detail, but let's get to the final 10 here in our top 30 overall AFL fantasy rankings.
All right, coming in at number 21 is Andrew Gaff. I think with the addition of Tim Kelly, he is going to be out of that inside mid role that we saw him get a little bit of time in 2019 and just play that pure wing. I think he averaged around 110, but that's going to drop back down to maybe a 100, 102. The Sick Dog comes in at number 22 for me. I think a lot of people got burnt by him in 2019, only averaged 83. But we have seen him score in the mid-90s, so there is plenty of upside. And if he's my first defender in the third round, I'm pretty happy with that. Got Paddy Cripps. Again, people would have been burnt by him.
Jamie Cripps.
I love the bloke. What can I say? That blonde hair.
It's Mango on chains.
It is. Paddy Cripps, number 23. Look, we know what his ceiling is. He can bang out some monster scores. The question is the tag target for Paddy Cripps. Can he break it? Can his teammates help him break that tag target? Again, he's more of a super coach player than AFL fantasy, so I'm pretty happy with him there at 23. 24 is Crisp from Collingwood. Again, had a banger year, average 97. Might regress a little bit if some of the blokes like Schoenberg or Dunn come back. I know they're a bit more locked down there and Dunn, but it could affect his role there in the defence. But he's still going to put out some banger scores. Elliot Yeo, he's going to be the number one guy in that midfield. He went both ways in 2019 in attack and defence and was pretty much the only one who did that there. So I've got no qualms with Elliot Yeo. Scotty Pendlebury, with Dane Beam's mental health issues, I think Bucks keeps him in there for another year because you've got Treloar and Adams who just butcher the ball, but you need someone with a bit of class to use it there. So Pendle stays in there as well. I've got Sam Doherty at 27. Now, he's a really hard one to rank. I've got him there as someone who could probably get you in the 90s as a defender. I'm not confident on it. I've certainly got to watch, what is it, the Marsh series this year, so it's certainly a watch for me with Sam Doherty there, but I'd be pretty happy to take a risk at him. Yes, he might be my number one defender, but I'd have to have a look at that later on and maybe slide him as a D2. Michael Walters, he's got the forward status. He averaged about 97. He's going to be up there yet again, I think, in terms of competing with Dusty and Whitfield, depending on his role as the number one forward. And he's a pretty safe bet and can put out some banger scores. Dane Zorko, the old man, just keeps on plodding along. He's 30, 31 in 2020. I'd be pretty happy to own him, even though he is the tag target. And number 30, Caleb Daniel, the smallest man in the competition. He just racks him up in that defense, and he's not going to be a tag target. So, and the Doggies want him using his elite foot skills, kicking it out of defense. So he's going to get those kick-ins every game he plays. And that's me top 30.
Alrighty, I think this sort of third round, if you will, is where it gets a little spicier and there's probably a few differences here. I want to start with Pendlebury. Cam and I do not have Pendlebury in our top 30, and I'm on the completely opposite page from you on thinking that he can maintain his value for next year. Jono, your explanation was you don't think that they'll roll with a bit of an Taylor Adams, Treloar. Also, they ran with DeGoey in there a fair bit last year as well. You think he might be playing a bit more forward, but you just think Pendles will be once again a premium midfielder of the competition.
I think he is, with especially Dane Beams out. They need clean users outside to clear the ball out. And Treloar and Adams, they just butcher it when going forward, inside forward 50, whereas Pendlebury can actually hit a target like your Degoe or Stevenson inside that 50. So I think they will use Pendles in the midfield quite a lot.
No, I think it's really interesting, actually, just on Pendles and Doss, what you were saying in regards to it sort of, you know, diverging a little bit here for us in the final 10. People should maybe consider the fact that, you know, last year only 29 players averaged over 100. So what we're looking at here is, you know, if Doss and I are probably essentially saying that we think Pendles will come under 100 as an average by not ranking him in our top 30. Of those 29 players, three were rucks, three were defenders, 20 were mids, and three were forwards. So I think there's maybe a bit of a, you know, bit of a saying that Pendles isn't in the top 30 doesn't mean that he's going to score 80. It means that he could get 99 and still be quite serviceable.
Yeah, I've got five blokes there who've scored under 100 in my last 10.
Yeah, it's a crazy top 30 you got there, Jono.
Thank you. That's what happens when you drink and rank.
All right, let's get into some of the huge differences here. And I want to talk about Tim Taranto, okay? It's probably the spiciest differences we've got here. Jono, Tim Taranto, not in your top 30.
He is not. And because you have a Josh Kelly and a Cal Ward who can't play anywhere else, he's like Tom Liberatore of GWS, can only play midfield. Taranto at least can play a little bit half forward and inside mid. So, look, he'd be in that 29 to 34 range for me, Taranto. Whereas I'm not confident enough to get him as, what, potentially an M2? No, thank you very much. I'd want him as an M3, maybe even M4.
So I've got him at 29, and for very similar reasons. Doss, whereabouts do you have him ranked?
Tim Taranto is number 6 for me.
Number 6. So you think he's going to improve on that average from last year?
He doesn't need to improve. He can actually drop a couple of points.
Because he would have been going in your 4th, 5th rounds last year. You've got him now in the 1st round. So you're expecting his value to go up. So you're basically drafting him.
No, I mean, I'm just picking him at a spot where I think he's, where his average is valuable for me. I don't think he needs to go up. He just needs to.
But he does actually have to go below up him, because that's what last year he was down lower, and he's now you, for you he's going up. So therefore, you're predicting his average to go up. Yes,
Cam.
Well, for me, I actually think this is really interesting because it's where almost gut feel comes into it quite strongly, because you could argue that someone like Dunkley, there's a little bit of uncertainty on him. Whitfield, there's a little bit of uncertainty on him. Tom Mitchell, there's a little bit of uncertainty on him. But it's where your gut feel is on that uncertainty that makes you rank someone higher than someone else. So looking at Dossie's rankings, he's got Mitchell at 10 and he's got Taranto at 6. But I would argue that, you know, there's uncertainty for both of them, and both could potentially drop 10 points on average. Yet, you're comfortable taking them in the first round anyway. So I think it's where that sort of gut feel comes into it a little bit more.
I do want to touch, like, in terms of my explanation as to why I have him there. Now, it could be completely off, and I definitely need to see. If I see that we see a lot of Callum Ward and he's looking awesome in the preseason and stuff, and he is straight back into that midfield in our Marsh series, etc., it could change the way I feel about it. And especially if we see De Boer continue to have a huge role in the midfield, because I think Hopper showed that he can do it in there. He was like one of their best clearance players, came, you know, third in the BNF, whatever. But the other thing was De Boer was so high up in their best and fairest as well. Now, with the names coming back, and if we see a bit more, if everyone can play all the games that they should be able to play, Tim Taranto, does he stay in the midfield? Because that's the big argument here. If you're saying if he stays in the midfield, he can still score well, you guys just don't think he'll be in there as much, which I think he will be in there as much. I think they'll find a way for him to be in there.
And here's another thing. Dossie, you might be too young to remember, but Steve Coniglio actually played as a run-with player early in his career and actually played that semi-tag role before De Boer got in there. So if Leon Cameron goes back to that, then that severely impacts Cornelio and throws De Boer out. So it's another question to be asked.
Cornelio's a goal kicker as well. So that's why I think, you know, if you're talking about versatility, I thought Cornelio's the one with a lot of us. He played as a forward, as a junior, was a gun goal kicker. Like, he can go forward and kick goals. He kicks a goal as a mid player that can push forward. So for me, that's where we're different. And I think these are the GWS players are probably one of the teams that are going to change quite a bit as we get closer to the season, I think. What's another player that you noticed, Cam, that's quite different in these rankings?
Well, for me, there were three in there, that four in Jono's bottom, you know, 21 to 30 that I haven't got in mind. I find it hard to put them in there. So Doherty, I find really hard to put in there. Walters, Caleb Daniel, and James Sicily. I think they sit in the 30 or 40 range, and I think that would be really fair.
But Walters is M3 last year. When you take all the other guys out, he's going to be M3.
F3.
F3, sorry.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, at the moment with Frio, like, maybe they play him on a wing. And because he's an elite runner, he...
But that's Steve Hill, that's a Chera role, and maybe a...
I think the scary thing is if he plays more forward. Yeah, we saw him play a fair bit of midfield last year, inside midfield. And if they're talking about bringing through Chera and Brayshaw, I mean, Walters might be just better to, like, they might need him in there. But we don't know what Longmuir is thinking. So he's one that could replicate what he did last year or even improve if he does play more midfield. But do they need someone to kick snags? That's where I'm worried about Walters.
Hey, yeah. They've got Cam McCarthy, ultimate wingman.
But I think that's where maybe, Jono, yours and my draft strategy would change, in that, you know, for me, I'm pretty keen on taking forwards a little bit later, even the top tier forwards. I think I've only got Dusty, Dusty and Whitfield in my top 30. In that sort of 30 to 40 range, I'd feel a bit more comfortable taking someone like a Walters or...
See, I think I've said it before, I'm pretty keen to square away one of those top three forwards in my draft this year.
Yeah. One that I've noticed, actually, Doss, I'm pretty keen to talk about, Jordan Dawson.
He squeezed into 30. Look, I might have just put it there as a little bit of a joke, but if you're talking about squaring away that F1, Jono, I've got in my tiering at the moment, after those first two, I'm just not comfortable with basically any of these forwards. And I'd rather go for a lottery type player that could bump up that average.
What about your boy Zeebel?
Oh, Zeebel's, mate, undraftable.
Come on, tee off.
No, so yeah, that was more of a little bit of a joke. But I do rate Jordan Dawson highly, as we all know. But
well, I've got a question for you boys. You've both got ROB, Riley O'Brien, in your top 30s.
We do.
Please explain.
Just waiting for the question.
Cam, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I think he's a fucking awesome... Well, pardon me. I think he's an awesome ruckman. He's going to be fantastic next year. He showed a massive ceiling this year. And I think he should improve year on year as well. So, like, I generally wouldn't rank three ruckmen in the top 30. I think there's generally probably Gorn and Rundy and then big gap before a ruck rush around round six. And then, you know, another ruck rush right at the end of your draft. Riley O'Brien, for me, sits in this awkward tier of he's probably going to end up being the third best ruckman, but there's also an opportunity that he becomes, you know, 105, 106 average. So you could potentially be getting a, you know, almost Gorn level ruckman in the third round, and I think that's a massive bargain.
Yeah, I understand it, but it's still too early for me because, I mean, Frampton comes alive, he's just going to shit all over him.
Yeah, look, there's a chance, but I just apparently, don't...
From what Channel 7
Channel
says?
Channel 7 has Rupert Wills breaking out.
And Alex Keith, who broke out last
and
year.
And Brandon Starovich?
Starovich.
And some Watson bloke from... West Coast,
Francis Watson, the perennial breakout. He's more of a salary cap hype guy. But the reason, though, I have Riley O'Brien so high is because, and we might be overplaying this, as Steve kind of suggested last week with the Rowan Marshall factor, that like Rowan Marshall and Jared Witts, there's some questions about whether they can maintain it. Jared Witts' career year, you know, having a bit more help at the Suns, take away a few of his disposals. and Rowan Marshall having Paddy Ryder there. And below that, it's your poo-poo rucks, like your Goldstein. You've got to take a punt on maybe like a Nat Nui bounce back or a Lysette. It's all gross after that, I think. And for me, it's more like you lock away Riley O'Brien at that point, and then you sort of, the rest are all the lottery picks. Whereas I think we're in the situation at the moment, apart from maybe the Billy Frampton hype, we think Riley O'Brien has one of the safest ruck roles in the league. And if he's that 100-plus guy, I think he might be one of only three 100-plus ruckmen. So that's why I have him in my
but
top
where's,
three.
Where's Goldstein's competition and where's Lysette's competition? And don't let him.
Yes, but their ceiling, I don't think, is as high
Goldstein,
as Riley O'Brien.
Goldstein's competition is Father Time.
I understand that, but he's still a dominant ruckman with, he's got, what, Tristan Tzeri, who we've never even seen? That's his competition. Or maybe Tom Campbell.
No, I see your point, but I would feel, you know, again,
But I'm not drafting him early. That's the thing. I'm not drafting Goldstein early.
Yeah. All right, Jono or Cam, any final thoughts on these ranks? I'm sure there's maybe just a couple more we can touch on.
Sloan Doggy. You both got Sloan Boy.
Yeah, it's the contested possessions departing for Adelaide. I think we looked at sort of the opportunity leaving clubs. But
wouldn't that be better for Supercoach than...
Yeah, but just possessions in general. I think there's
just
more.
Just possession.
Yeah, I think there's more to go around. And Sloan, I see a little bump from, like, because they didn't bring in any other gun mids. And that could be where we see the breakout. That's why I think there's a bit of breakout buzz for someone like a Chase Jones or someone else to move into that inside midfield. I just see the Crouches, and that's if all healthy, and Sloan just going up a little bit.
Who is the new coach of Adelaide, by the
Matthew
way?
Matthew Nix.
Yes. Stevie Nix's brother. Gotcha.
And, I mean, Sloan's a gun when he's off the leash. So whether he's just tightened up, that's obviously neither here nor there. But
and you guys don't have Crisp in your 30
as
well.
Crisp is in my 30.
Is he?
Crisp is in my 30.
Yeah, so he sat out for me. And I was toying up just before we started the show. I had him in there at 28 and subbed him out for Tom Stewart in the same position. I think Tom Stewart, his average of 95 in AFL Fantasy last year, plays a really similar role to your sort of Sicily type, except I think he's just a better player. Like I genuinely think Tom Stewart is awesome to watch, and he has a very friendly intercept kick mark fantasy game. I'm keen as for him.
Geelong love coming through.
Yeah, well, hey, I only...
Sorry, what? Did I say that
earlier? Two Sorry. Geelong players. Two. I didn't even rank Duncan.
Yeah, well, he's a hard one, considering just before we started recording, I think, Cam, you read out that he had head, shoulders, knees and toes, bloody every single sort of surgery
Correct.
Under the sun.
Yeah,
prior
it was
to Christmas,
a knee injury at the end of last season, shoulder surgery after the season, and then hip surgery recently as well. So he fell out for me because of that. And the other one, I think, did anyone think about Tim Kelly?
Nope.
I did not.
I think he could be around that. I think he's in the next bracket down, maybe a little bit later. It's just such an unknown again for what West Coast are going to do with him. Do they play him as a forward mid or a mid forward? That makes sense.
And I agree with you. And that's the same reason why I didn't have him in there as well.
All right. I think that's pretty much all the discussion we'll have on our top 30 for now. Make sure you let us know what you think. We are at the Draft Doctors on Twitter. Also, check out the website, thedraftdoctors.com.au, for all our preseason content. Cam, just a few public service announcements, I think, before we finish this off.
Yeah, so look, we haven't been able to verify this with any sources, but it's something going around on the social media at the moment around Ultimate Footy. And so this is a shout out to any keeper leagues, pretty important announcement. Verbatim, it says, "Happy New Year, coaches. Just a quick announcement that Ultimate Footy will soon be undergoing some important updates, and from next week you will no longer be able to log in and see your results from the 2019 season. If you need any past season information, like ladder positions, finals results, or player lists, keepers, please log in now and copy these down, as this information won't be available until the site returns in February. Tag your league manager and stay tuned to this page for upcoming blah, 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 blah." So just something to be really considerate of if you are a keeper manager, keeper league coach, you might need to log in take all your details down. Otherwise, you're, you know, potentially at risk of losing some stuff until the site returns.
And make sure you take your own screenshots so your commissioner doesn't stitch you up with it.
Yeah, correct. And then the other thing, so we had one question today from Adam Warney Child, Mr. Warndog.
Who's he? Never heard of him.
DT Talk Warndog. You love.
Who?
Oh, my God. So he says, why can't people read? When I post things on the AFL Fantasy Facebook page regarding who to pick first in draft, there are multiple comments saying neither or saying your team is terrible if they are in it. Do people need more education on what draft is? Jono.
Can I answer this one honestly? Learn to fucking read. It says draft format. And warning, it's just like the people who we get questions from in regards to salary cap, yet we are the draft doctors. Draft. Not salary cap doctors. Draft. Yeah,
we definitely empathise with you there, Warnie, in regards to some people's lack of reading ability sometimes. And, you know, I genuinely think that maybe people do need to be a little bit more informed about draft. I mean, if you go into a season thinking that there is one answer, as soon as literally anyone else takes your pick, you may as well fucking pack it up. Because everyone has lost, not just you. Your entire league has lost because no one can get that one answer. There are multiple answers and it changes in every league because every draft is unique. Having people in your dream draft team at this time of the season, even if it's bloody George Hall and Smith, is not wrong. It's speculative. And you know what? If you end up drafting them late, you waiver them anyways because that's what draft is all about.
No, but to be fair to Warnie and the boys there, they are purely mainly AFL, well, salary cap, right? So a lot of people might not even bother with the draft and they're like, ooh, new article. And they see these options put up and they just go, what the hell is this shit? So again, it's an education. And for those who are new to that, it's, well, not to our listeners, but to Warnie, maybe just have a bit of an explanation and just say, look, draft format is completely different to salary cap where one person can own one player. And that's why we're putting these up. Options up and just trying to expand their horizons.
Give them a bit of a Mango Unchained, hey, Jono.
Damn straight. with a furphy chaser.
Delicious stuff. All right, next week we are going to, hopefully, if all goes to plan, we'll be doing our first positional ranking show, starting with the Rucks, and we will be touching on AFL Fantasy and Supercoach as well, splitting the show into two like we did last year as well. We will see you then.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors Podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.